Tom freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Go
fuck yourself.
And I am a sports entertainer.
Welcome everybody to Eat Sleep Elite. I am one of your hosts, Charlie, joined as always by the wonderful, the Duke. How's it going there, buddy?
Miles Garrett resigned. What the fuck is going on?
All the monies. It's AEW Revolution, guys. It's first main pay-per-view of AEW schedule. They had Wrestle Dynasty as like a co-show in Japan, but
that counts. We're counting it.
Yeah, anyway. This is AEW's first hosted one in the States this year. And we've talked.
We really should have made Grand Slam a pay-per-view, if we're being honest.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about how the build-up to this pay-per-view and how big it's been, and there's been, honestly, from beginning to end, some of the most incredible stories that AEW's been telling in this time. They've all been very exciting, and it's made week-to-week television very exciting. That being said, Duke, it's time for us to talk about the show. What did you think of the 6th annual AEW Revolution tonight?
I thought there was a lot of stuff to like on this show. I mean, I don't think every match achieved the same level of quality as each other, but I think that overall, the package of the show, like, I think one thing Tony Khan's gotten really good at, I don't think I would have reordered the matches on the show, other than that maybe there would have been some matches I wouldn't have had on the card against each other anyway, regardless. I don't think placement would have helped them at all. I think they still would have stood out along the card, no matter where you put them, if there was a difference in, you know what I mean? If you were to compare them and there was some kind of difference, it would stand out regardless of where they are on the card. You know what I mean? It'd be like if Jericho was wrestling, I don't know, enhancement talent number 13, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's going to be the worst match on the card, probably no matter what, just because everybody else is just having a match. You know what I mean? I don't know. I think you're getting what I'm saying here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I'd say. My overall thoughts. Everything was pretty good. And then there was some stuff that I was like, okay, but I don't think it was anything we weren't expecting to be that way. That sounds fair, I think, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was, we had three kind of back-to-back in a row at this point tonight that it was pretty
imagine
unreal.
If we ended on that, man.
It would have been pretty insane. Like, there were some fucking really, really elite level wrestling.
I know I just broke your rule, but I feel like I'm allowed to say at least that, right? That's fine, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I will say this overall, I mean, this is the reason why AEW is so special, is every single pay-per-view they go out and they knock it out of the park. And here we are yet again, this time at the Crypto.com Arena, also known as the Staples Center, for forever, it felt like.
As Crypto sticks around, they may change that name eventually.
I know,
so I don't
right?
know if Crypto.org will necessarily stay, unless it's like a nonprofit or something, but I don't know anything about that, but you know.
But yeah, let's get into some more specifics here. Just we had a couple pre-show matches. Commander and Hologram picked up a win. Danny and the Undisputed Era picked up a win over Shane Taylor Promotions, and then Big Boom AJ and the Conglomeration got a nice victory over Johnny TV and MXM Collection with the Rizzler got a nice big reaction. So yeah, then we got into our main card, and you knew we're in for something special when we opened the night with Hangman Adam Page taking on and defeating MJF. The crowd was hot. These guys brought everything that we wanted to. One of the elements that they really drove home in this match was MJF's emotion and just the emotional elements that he's brought into this feud. And why do they like you and not me? And that's MJF's insecurity. And that's something that has been on display in this program. And I thought it played out well in the match. So it's absolutely brutal spots.
Yeah. I guess the driving force behind his entire character since right before he lost the title, that became like the key breaking point for him and Adam Cole, was that he was ultimately too insecure to really trust him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And Adam Cole was going to betray him. But at the end of the day, that's what drove the wedge between them more than anything. Because I don't know. We don't know for sure that Adam would have ultimately betrayed him, because he even said in the promos after, like, well, maybe I wouldn't have. I don't know. I never got around to it, you know, like, but I did have that plan originally, you know. So, you know, it's just interesting how he manages to weave. And I know this is a bit of a derail because you're about to talk about the match. So I'll let you do that in just a second. But I think this is just.
No, I've pretty much already covered it. So go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. I think, you know, like, that, that MJF has managed to weave this sort of like bits of his character that he's working on at the time, working on whatever you want to call it, like that he's like playing up into, I guess, as making the main point of the story. He manages to weave it in to like even the, you know, not just in the in-ring work, but like he manages to make it like the central point of the story that he's telling. You know what I mean? Like, which I think is, it's really interesting because like, I mean, think about how much people, you know, ding pro wrestling for not actually doing storytelling, like actual storytelling, like, you know, in-ring storytelling is one thing, right? But I think actually having like an arc for a character is something that like not even some of the best storytellers in AEW can always say for what's going on in their individual stories. I don't know. I mean, it's something I thought was worth bringing up, you know?
It's a fun element to the match, especially, you know, that he was able to bring with that. But yeah, I mean, this was really good, and you know,
that chair spot, bro. My God.
Yeah, that chair spot was brutal. MJF landing on his face, like, directly after, just brutal. Really good stuff here. And it just kind of set the tone for the night of, we're going out there with two of our top dogs, and we're letting them open the show, and that's why I just feel like this card is so special. This card is almost an amalgamation of like what AEW can be on like the top of the top level.
Yeah. I think my favorite counter of the night was in this match, which was the Heat Seeker being countered into the Deadeye or whatever.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So good. I also go ahead.
I was going to say that is exactly what he followed into that Angel's Wings.
Yes. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I was going to say, I think MJF might have like the best in-ring, like, and when I say in-ring heel work, what I mean is like wrestling work that is actually heel. Like, he's doing bad guy things with his ring work. You know what I mean? I think MJF is the best at that in wrestling right now. And I don't think there's really an argument for it. You know, like who would you even put in that conversation?
He's so special with it, man. He's so special. Yeah. Buckshot got the clean victory for Hangman Adam Page here, which I like the decision. I like Hangman picking up a win and seeing where he goes next.
I mean, I have an idea. If Swerve goes on and wins that championship, I have a feeling he's going to have an issue with that, you know?
Yep.
I think so, that writes itself, you know?
We had another TBS title match where Mercedes Moné took on a defeated Momo Watanabe. And I got to tell you, Momo was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
She was, her striking was so good. She was so fucking good.
Especially her kicks, dude.
Oh my God. When she put her in the tree of woe or whatever, and then she's kicking her. Oh my God. Just her striking ability.
She kicked her to pieces because that's what she did. Like, she literally kicked her into actual shreds.
So fucking just stiff and beautiful.
Ooh, they both hit some really, really nice, clean looking meteoras too, and both in different spots they did. That was actually kind of nice. I didn't know why, but it's like, it must be they just have similar in-ring styles or something like that, and like the way they both wrestle, and that's why they were like, yeah, no, we'll do this match. So I'm down. And if that's how we're going to, like, if we're just like perpetually going to have her be champion, Mercedes that being for a while with all these companies, you're going to have to come up with new ways to make it interesting. So I'm down for that 1,000,000%. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
And Momo's someone I've never seen her wrestle too much. And it's just like, she walks on into this big spot. It's a pay-per-view match at Revolution in front of a massive crowd.
And we see her wrestle like what, once before this? Like,
and she fucking crushes it. Like, that is that. I will always have a soft spot for that, this happening in AEW. I absolutely fucking love it. And it was, it was really
open up a huge opportunity for this girl if she ever decides she wants to wrestle in America. You know what I mean? Because AEW will be instantly interested. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I don't know, like, the tier of success she's had in Stardom before. I don't know how far she's gone in Stardom. I just really don't know. But look,
far enough to be considered for one of the spots in that Fatal 4-Way to face Mercedes in the first place. So,
absolutely.
You know, probably pretty decently far, at least recently, you know?
So, yeah, I anytime I see her name now on a card, I'm going to get a little more excited. So, but Billy Starks was in the crowd again in the luxury suite taking notes. So keep an eye out for that, I guess. But Mercedes ended up winning with the, she hit a crossbody, the Moneymaker connected. She spun into the Statement Maker for the submission win. So, yeah, really, really solid stuff. And Mercedes' title reign, I mean, this, her match catalog for this TBS title reign is absolutely insane. Good for her.
I don't know how we're going to ever talk about it one day.
She has been such a success for that signing. Every single thing that we wanted. I mean, we're coming on a year now from Big Business. It was about a year from this week, I think. I think it was March 13th. It was somewhere around there. And it has been such a success. I'm so happy with how far she's gone. And just,
it's funny. I think she had the trajectory in our mind that Jay White was going to have when he first came in. You know what I mean? That he was going to win gold quickly and then hold it for a while. You know what I mean? And then that just didn't end up happening for him, but it did happen for her. So I'm at least happy with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she won it pretty quick. I mean, so yeah. Up next, we had our number one contender for the AEW World Title match. And I'll let you take the lead here, where we had a hell of a battle between Swerve Strickland and Ricochet.
Yeah, this was an absolute banger of a match. Swerve and Ricochet are obviously, like, I think probably, I think it's really unquestionable. They've had the best storyline recently in AEW, like one-on-one. I think for a while it was Will and Kyle. I think at least for me, you know what I mean? I think that was the one that was like, I was the most invested in. And then I think that one kind of, they were like, okay, this is still going on, but we're going to like make this like a secondary almost like main feud in the main event. Like, whereas this, because I think it ended up becoming so big, it turned Ricochet into, I'm going to say it, a superstar. He is at that level at this point, you know?
Yep.
I don't know how you don't have Ricochet immediately be back like, in this contention for this title. Shit, if Swerve wins it, he's probably going to have to face him for it, right? You know, so, could be. I mean, and, you know, like, so, and it was interesting because I think there was a part of us that even though we were like in our minds, Swerve needs to win this. If Ricochet wins this, I don't think we're against that. You know what I mean? Like, because, I mean, Ricochet could be a world title contender. Now, I think we would just know that means whatever happens next, he's probably not beating Mox, you know, because I don't think he'd be a guy to beat Mox right now. I mean, who knows, right? But, I don't know. This match just has been such great storytelling. And, you know, I don't know. It's just in our mind, do we think this is going to cap off this feud ultimately, like for at least for some time until.
I think for a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think this. I think this is like with Hangman. I think they're going to be at least these two guys are going to be always at each other's throats forever, you know? So, you know, it makes sense. And
I'd almost love to see those guys trade partners right now. I'm curious what Ricochet and MJF would look like.
100%. That would be great. You know, we have a world title feud for you know, we run back Hangman versus Swerve because we know that's going to be money. And then we have Ricochet test his metal against. And it'd be interesting to see who would be the babyface in that feud. Is that, are we turning Ricochet back at that point? I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how that would play, you know. But yeah, anyway, not just to actually talk about the match, but because I did write some stuff down about it. Obviously, we had some funny chants. We had, you are bald, you are still bald. At one point. Nana abandoned Swerve, which I guess we're just gonna have to have him and not like acknowledge that in like a promo or something. That's the only thing I can think, because like they made a big deal out of it. Now they were all buddy buddy at the end, but I don't think Swerve should just be okay with this. That's not how that works. You know what I mean? You just don't betray this guy. You know, like
Swerve was on his knees giving him the jacket. I mean, maybe that they must have come full circle at like, look, man, we had some differences for a minute here, but at the end of the day, you're my guy, and if I want to reach the next level, having you by my side is where I want it.
I do want Swerve to hit him with a, if you ever do that again, though, I'm killing you. You know, like,
he should, yes, 100% agree. Yeah.
So I do want him to acknowledge it at least. Acknowledge him.
Yes.
But yeah, so yeah, I obviously abandoned him. This was a super hard-hitting match. Super athletic as well. I mean, there was times when it felt like almost Will Ospreay versus Ricochet-esque, you know what I mean? In terms of like them just looking like absolutely athletic fucking, you know, and it wasn't like the first time that they met when it was actually like fully like that, you know what I mean? But it was still, there was elements of that. It was almost like a best of, like a, not best of, but like a, the hits almost being replayed of the stuff that they'd already previously done. You know, you had obviously, you had the really athletic match, and then you have the really insane, you know, just knockdown drag out fight match, you know what I mean? And then you have this, you know, and just insanity, you know? There was a neck bump paradise at one point is what I called it. I don't even know. there was a bumping on the necks. It was crazy, you know? And then at one point, Nana tries to reclaim the robe, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't go well for him. yeah. How do we feel about Swerve kicking out of the 630? That's a question I do actually have. Because it is supposed to be a finishing move.
Yeah,
right?
No, I dig it. I mean, this is Swerve we're talking about.
Sure.
This is the guy who's gone to hell and back.
100%.
This is Mr. AEW, and I think proving by the end of this match, it solidified to me what was going to happen next for him. Just because it feels like the Orange Cassidy thing was very cute, and I think if they had ran that now, I think Orange Cassidy probably could fucking win. But it was the first one, right? So we were constantly trying to find Mr. AEW, and it's just like he's been in our face the entire time. They just had to kill little time. And how does he do that? He goes out there and has an all-timer with Ricochet for a couple months. I mean, it's that is how good Swerve is. It doesn't matter. He will make whatever thing he's in, title or not, especially not title. Look at Hangman this too? And look
he
at Ricochet.
Wasn't even feuding with, he wasn't even open for a feud at the time. Ricochet was still wrapping up with Will, and he was just like giving him shit, and that's what led to this. And that's how brilliant Swerve is, because he saw like, oh, this guy's going to need something to carry this momentum. You know what I mean?
Embarrassed him at the end of his match on the pay-per-view after he lost to Okada.
Mm-hmm.
Kicked him while he was down, because that's what Swerve does. But we love him for it. That's the brilliant thing. And yeah, it was really fucking good. The double house call, big pressure for the win.
Brilliant was that? Actually, let's just give some credit to the both Will and fucking and Swerve and Ricochet all coming out of that feud between the two of them together and turning that into two different, actually individually phenomenal feuds for both guys.
Yes.
That is just great stuff right there from Tony Khan. You got to give it up, you know, like
this felt very focused. That's kind of the theme of tonight. I mean, everything felt very focused.
Bro, kicked out of like two house calls in a row. What is this guy on? And what did he, what is Ricochet
It was
done?
So good. This was so good. And shout out Leslie Jones in the crowd. She was absolutely crushing it. She was fucking having a great
time.
Gotta
have her in the crowd for more shows. She was going nuts.
Rooting for Swerve, rooting against Ricochet. Like, she was great. So, yeah, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that. She was really fun in this. And yeah, just again, we kind of talked about the end, but they did hug it out. Nana went crazy with the dance and good stuff here. Up next, we had an AEW Continental Championship match where we had Okada take on and defeat Brody King. Rough spot for the match because the crowd was kind of cooling down in the first half of this match, but they started to get into it towards the end. Unfortunately, with Okada, this is going to happen now with All In, I think, and it's going to happen sometimes. We know he's not going to lose his title until All In. So every match, and look, I'd love to be wrong. And he drops it on a fucking, he drops it at Dynasty or he drops it on a Collision. I'd love to be wrong. It just feels like that's not going to happen. It's been a very, very protected title reign. So you go into the match, it's already a little bit down because he hasn't had a lot of time with Brody on television or anything.
Anytime. I mean, they literally just feels had like him a, bump into them in the back when Julia came back from a win or something like that, right? Or something like that.
They, they focused much more with the Buddy version, and I think maybe in a different timeline, this is a rematch with him and Buddy if the injury didn't happen to him. I don't know. But either way, he's made his way through the bitches, as he said. So, yeah, I mean, he hit with the flush and got the Rainmaker, and I mean,
do we think he's going to defend at Dynasty? I mean,
yeah, I'd assume so. I mean, he's probably still going to defend it on TV, too. This just felt like a Collision or a Dynamite main event match. I mean, there wasn't a lot of heat to it or anything, which is, it stands out from the rest of the card because of that, right?
Was it a mistake to tease Kenny versus him, like, too early?
Yes and no. You want to do it because that is the match on American soil that everyone fucking is going to always point to. Kenny versus Okada 5, you know, that is the match, right? So if you're going to tease it, fuck it, do it 7 months in advance, right? But yeah. Anything else you wanted to add from that one? It was fine. The match was, this is just one of the, it was,
like you said, it was like a good TV main event and it was just on a pay-per-view. So Mike, I don't know, maybe this should have been a little able to cook a little bit more and it would have been fine. But
and again, look at it, was just following. I mean, it was literally just following three badass matches. So it felt like we had kind of a break in the action with this and the next match, which, oh, fuck it. Let's just get into it. The Hurt Syndicate took on and defeated the Outrunners. And something we were both kind of calling out while this match was happening. Look, the Outrunners, we all enjoy it, right? It's fun. But sometimes you just need to kill some motherfuckers. And they kind of controlled the first half of the match. Hey, whatever. You know, it is what it is. I like him as much as the next guy. But we finally have dominant tag champions. And it felt like the Hurt Syndicate. Once MVP, you know, had his halftime speech and fired him up, Bobby went crazy, beating the hell out of people in the rings. You know, it was great. But Yeah.
I'll tell you where they lost me was where there was a spot where the Outrunners were like firing up. Both big guys were laid out in the ring and looked like they were like fucked up. And I was like, this is not the image we should be getting from this match right now. What is happening? Like, what? Like,
this felt like a chance to. We're giving the Outrunners their moment of getting a pay-per-view match for getting over organically, right? I think that was the basis of the match.
Wait, hold on. Let me just say something really quick. So let me get this straight. So what we're saying in canon right now is that the two previous tag team champions, the Private Party and the Guns, neither of them are good enough to even hold a candle to this team, right? But
correct.
The Outrunners, who have never held the championships and have never really won a lot of major matches.
They looked much more competitive than Private Party did in the two matches against this team. Hey, it is, you know, a little shocking. We saw a crew in the crowd, of course, Andretti and Rush, Leo Rush, that is. So Lashley hit a spear. They hit their badass finisher and just, you know, in a night where we had a shitload of length and a lot of matches, this was just kind of crazy. It was still the shortest match of the night. Don't get me wrong, but. Yeah, just interesting. Very interesting way that they went about that. But that's okay. We had our middle of the road matches, and then we get into the rest, and the rest was just straight heaters, right? So, timeless Toni Storm, the Hollywood ending. She takes on and defeats Mariah May. Wow. This was beautiful. I think this was everything I would have wanted out of the final chapter. I am so happy with how great this story ended up being. And I'm so happy for them to go out there and have this match on pay-per-view. I think it deserved because AEW still hasn't had a women's match main event at pay-per-view. And I think this is the first time that this match just had more heat than the main event. And I think the crowd would have been there, and the crowd was there for the entirety of this match. Some absolutely insane spots, whether it's the glass being punched, Toni Storm was cut open within 3 minutes, and she had the crimson mask for the rest of the time.
Bro, she looked like a murder victim toward the end.
She absolutely did. It was emotional. Toni Storm, they brought back the shoe. She was beating the crap out of her with it. There was just a lot of fun, bloody spots that.
Most metal spots I've ever seen, or I guess glass spots, but one of the most metal spots I've ever seen where they both grabbed buckets of glass and then taped up the inside of their, or adhesive on the outside of their hands and then picked up glass and started punching each other with it.
And I think we can definitely say this is. Without a doubt now, beginning to end, the best women's feud we've ever had in AEW. And I think this is going to be the gold standard of it. This is going to be what people are going to try and shoot to beat. This also had the violent match. And I think this will be the crown of that now. Because for a long time, I mean, I'd have to look at how many years it's been, but Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker's lights out match has kind of held the crown for the most violent women's bloody match. And I do believe we topped it because there was a visual of the camera was above the ring and you have Toni Storm laying down. And when you see her face, I think that is the visual that will be used as like the thumbnail, if you will, going forward from this program and just from this match and why it'll get named the most violent one. They absolutely killed it. Just give me some of your thoughts, I guess, on just this is the end of it, man.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. A Hollywood ending. Yeah, I know. I mean, oh, Jesus. I'm about to just drop my phone. That's fucking to like do a fucking ninja move to grab it. All right. Anyway. But yeah, I know. Okay. So this match starts off insane because fucking Mariah immediately rushes up onto the stage. And then we have some like random spots on the stage. But then Toni grabs her and they hit a sky high off the stage through some tables. So you know you're in for some insanity off the rip, right? So like, I knew that was going to be nuts from there. Not long after that, I think, is when Toni got busted open. Yeah, I mean, that spot I mentioned with the glass buckets and stuff like that, and then Toni knocking Mariah out of the ring at one point, and then dumping all the buckets of glass into the ring, and then doing spots on that, and just insanity. I mean, the plunder was about. There was tables and stuff. There were people getting murdered. There was death. I don't know what was happening. I think they both died at least once, and they got revived by the power of, you know, I don't know, sex. I don't know. You know, like,
yeah.
You know, like, I absurdity. Like, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. This almost had like horror movie vibes to it at points. You know what I mean? Like, it was crazy. Like, ugh. Fun stuff.
And just all the little production things that they did to set this up. And I just thought it was beautiful. And now we get to see what happens with Mariah after this, you know? So it's going to be fun to see. I thought the closing shot of it where it had the end on the screen. And yeah, she hit the Storm Zero through the table. And that was what she used to win the war, if you will. And she was left laying on top of an unconscious Mariah May. And, you know, I think Mariah's earned a couple weeks off. She's going to be off for some time. And I think when she shows up next, it's going to be big. It's going to be awesome. And I can't wait to see what she does next. So, yeah. Jumping into our next match. And our next matches were, like, nearly all 30 minutes each. It's kind of fucking insane. We went back to back to back with these long-ass matches where we had Kenny Omega take on
Omega
and defeat Konosuke Takeshita to win the AEW International Championship.
Boo, Takeshita should have won.
Hey, so here we are. They're not fucking around, Duke. The clock is ticking on Omega's career. They're not going to fucking waste it, and they shouldn't. He's going to win championships, and he's going to fucking do it, and he's doing it fast. And he's going to do it in style because holy shit, this fucking match. This was awesome. How great is Konosuke Takeshita? I mean, seriously. Seriously. This guy's
in the world, probably.
He
honestly
is so fucking good.
Especially now that Bryan's retired. Definitely top five in the world, actually.
Takeshita just, there's something about his presence in the ring. Every single match, it just doesn't matter who he's in there with. But when you put him in there with someone like Kenny Omega, the possibilities are endless. This is their third time having a one-on-one match in this company already. Every single time, it's memorable. And every single time, it delivers. I love this match so much. We had Don Callis getting involved. He tried punching Kenny, but he hurt himself. It was just awesome. And Kenny ended up winning. With the like, he got a crucifix pin. Kenny didn't need to win with the one-winged angel. I love that element of it too, because what does that mean?
No, I tell you exactly what it means. Kenny's not able to necessarily always hit that move now because he's weakened, so he has to win desperately sometimes.
Yes, that's the kind of shit we fucking love in this, man. Just some really, really, really good stuff between the two of them, and it. It's one of those things with Takeshita when it comes to the strong style aspect, and he'll hit these forearms, or he'll hit it, they'll sound like the simplest things. It can be a forearm, it can be a suplex, right? It can just be him trying to roll someone up. But it's the way and how he does it. It feels like it's going to end the match every single time. It blows my mind. Just any of the thoughts you had on this one? I mean, and before we get into Takeshita's title reign, because this is going to be fun to talk about.
100%. Kenny took a head bump at one point that almost killed him, I think. That was crazy. Yeah, they were just smacking the piss out of each other. You know, Takeshita was being a sick fucking target, targeting the diverticulitis, you know, riddled fucking intestines, you know, like.
The table was like standing up on a weird angle.
Oh, yeah, that one was brutal. Oh, God.
Like, holy shit, man.
That wasn't even the one I was thinking of, though. I think this was something, I forget what he did here, but maybe it wasn't like he launched him. Oh, you know what this was here? He uncovered the barricade over by like the ring bell and was going to do his little like flip off of it. And when he went to flip, and he landed on his stomach on it. See, that's when I wrote that down. And that just shows you how much like he was really truly targeting that throughout, you know? So, but anyway, I wrote next to that, and this shows you how much fun I was having during this match. Bro was trying to spill his guts. Because he was.
He wants to see his entrails.
He wants to rip him from his chest. No, anyway. But yeah, I know. And Kenny kicking out of that knee strike at one after hitting it hit with it twice in a row, bro. I mean, we'll talk about just fucking sending fucking, you know, blood to your loins, you know, like Jesus, you know. But
it had been a little bit since we've seen a kick out at one.
Yeah, no, true. Like, AEW doesn't do that all the time. Like, it's not something you're going to see four times in the night. Like, I think they probably do have that conversation with people. Like, if they're going to do that, they're going to have somebody do that specifically so that...
Because I don't think it was last summer. I think it was 2023 when there was, like... they did it a couple times too many.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I believe it was a Dynamite where they did it twice in the same night. And it was just like, oh, God, we're losing some heat a little bit here.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because there's no reaction to the second one. Yeah. It already happened earlier. Everyone, like, already reacted to it. So,
like, all right, let's put that back in the bag. Let's calm down on that. Because when we do it, it's going to be a big deal, just like this. Nice call on that.
I put it in my notes also. This is probably going to go down as a top five pay-per-view match of the year, for sure, I would say. I don't know if it's even match of the night, but it's still going to be in that list, dude, I think. You know,
yeah. Quality, just unbelievable quality.
Yes.
And speaking of quality, let's get into Takeshi's title reign then.
Oh.
So he wins it at WrestleDream off of Will Ospreay. His title reign was 148 days, which puts him at the second most combined days overall, and also the second longest title reign. Of course, Orange Cassidy's 326 is the most here. So he wins the three-way match at WrestleDream over Ricochet and Ospreay, which was your match of the year last year on pay-per-view.
Yep.
He then takes it a week later, defends it against in a 30-minute match against Josh Alexander at Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling. And then, a couple weeks after that, New Japan Fighting Spirit Unleashed defends it against TJP. A couple weeks after that, a Full Gear defeats Ricochet. Insane match.
Yep.
The following month, World's End defeats Powerhouse Hobbs.
Yep.
In just a 15-minute fucking blaster.
Oh, yeah.
Wrestle Kingdom at the Dome defeats Shingo Takagi in a title for title match to become the never open weight champion as well.
Yep.
Oh, so what does he do the next night? Goes out and has a match against Tomohiro Ishii for the fucking championship in an absolute slobber knocker.
Oh, yeah.
That was just fucking mental. 3 weeks after that, AEW Collision Homecoming defeats Katsuyori Shibata. And then about a month after that, he defeated Orange Cassidy. What was that, last week? I believe it was my favorite.
That sounds right.
Yeah. There you have it. Okay, first of all, which match among those just sticks out to you the most?
I mean, I had to think of my favorite from last year probably has to be the one, right? I would have to think, you know? But, I mean...
You know, you can change it. You can say from his defenses, because that technically wasn't a defense.
No, I know, I'm sad, but I think because I picked that for favorite, it'd be hard for me to find a reason for that to not still be my favorite match that he had in the title reign. You know what I mean? Like, because that triple threat was just insane. I mean, it might be the best triple threat I've ever seen, like, straight up. Like,
it's up there.
It was, I can't think of a better one. You know, like, it's pretty, it's like three of the best wrestlers in the world all going at it in an absolutely insane match. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's not much else you can really say about that. And the fact that that is, like, in the middle of this title reign, because they wanted to give Ricochet and Will both, like, a rub at the time when they didn't really have something else besides fighting each other for them to do yet. You know what I mean? Like, they hadn't figured out the swerve and Kyle angles of it all. You know what I mean? Like, being the way to go. You know, like, just what a great match to have. And the reason why it stuck with me last year, because that match was just insane. And I remember thinking, yeah. When I get to the point where I'm like, there's no way this is going to be topped, and then that continues to just never happen, like, this is how I felt last year. So, you know, this match, though, it's tough to not say this match, because this match is also really insane.
Yep, in terms of title defenses, this was absolutely insane.
After Kenny's reign, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
I'll let you know what my favorite match is from this reign.
My favorite Konosuke defense is going to be the Ishii one, I think, outside of this one, of course, because when Ishii... There's a certain point sometimes in his matches when he just says, fuck it, I'm going to go out there and have some fun. And about 2 minutes into this match, a switch flipped for Ishii. And he's like, yeah, this kid's special. So I'm going to go out there. We're going to have a fucking memorable match.
That's true. I've never seen Ishii sell like I saw him sell in that match for literally anybody in his career. I've never seen that in any of the matches I've ever seen. It was crazy.
So fucking cool. And I'm so glad that match happened this year. And of course, you know, I'll be a little favorite towards the Hobbs match because I was there. That was a good time. But yeah, 148 day title reign. He had a good length reign. And I'm curious to see what Kenny does with it. And if we're talking about a lineage on a title, oh my God, Kenny Omega's our ninth holder.
Hear me out. 30-day title reign sprint, but he defends it every show, even on fucking, and they bring back Dark, and he defends it twice a week on Dark.
So we've gone from Pac to Orange Cassidy, John Moxley, Rey Fénix, back to Orange, Roderick Strong, Will Ospreay, MJF, Will Ospreay, Takeshita, and now Omega. Oh my God. The talent in this fucking company is insane. This title's history is fucking insane.
That's really crazy when you put it in perspective like that, you know?
Yes. Like, what the fuck? Jump into the next match then, where we have, speaking of our previous champion, we jump into Will Ospreay, Kyle Fletcher, steel cage match. You take it away on this one. What the hell did you think of this one?
This was insane. They did a lot of insane stuff in this match. You know, like there was a lot of insane stuff. I guess let's just kind of like parse through as much of it as we can without spending 30 minutes talking about the match. They open up like using the cage as like a weapon a lot. Like they're throwing each other into the cage. That did continue to happen throughout the match, but like there was like this very specific opening to this like spots at the beginning of the match where it ended up where Will was busted open from it, and then it was rubbed into the cage by Kyle, and then Kyle licked up. And then the whole like the through line there was Kyle licking the blood off the cage, you know? And then they started just hitting each other super hard for a while. Kyle ripped off a turnbuckle that was used. I don't remember at what point this happened because there was like some space in between some of the stuff that I wrote down. But I wrote down that there was this one diabolical counter into a DDT by Will at some point. I don't know when that was or what that was about, but I wrote it down, so it happened. It must have been crazy, you know?
Yeah, I think there was a point where Ospreay or Fletcher was trying to hit another Liger Bomb. And Ospreay popped up and he snapped that DDT real quick.
That sounds right. Whatever it was, it happened so quick that I was just like, oh, he killed him, you know?
Will Ospreay for you, right?
Yep. And then Mark Davis then came out at one point, opened up the cage door and brought in some weapons, which then he got hit with the cage and then got busted open.
That was great.
Yep, but I was pretty good. I wasn't expecting that, you know? Will was just like, fuck off, man. And then we had the barbed wire bat. Mick Foley reference from Will with the guns, you know. And then at one point Will gets you know he loses the upper hand and then they Kyle beats him up for a little bit and stuffs like a, I think it's a bloody like an armband that he wiped in the blood, right? Is that if I had that right? Yes.
Yeah, he got the United Empire. He pulled it out of his Johnson.
No, not whoa.
Yeah.
Anyway. That is what he did, though. And he, you know, shoved it in his mouth, and then I forget what movie he did right after that. It was just like a kick to the face, maybe, or something like that. I can't even remember.
Sounds about right.
Something along those lines. He did something to him after that. And then Will gets the upper hand again, hits a combo of a Stormbreaker and a Hidden Blade, and then that's interrupted by Davis. And then he hit my favorite spot of the entire fucking match, which was an Oz Cutter off of the cage wall. That was insane.
So good.
Like, I was like, what's he climbing the cage for? What's this motherfucker about to do? And then he hits the Oz Cutter, and I'm like, oh, all right, you know?
All the while, there's screwdriver shenanigans going on.
Yep.
Still.
Yep. They stabbed each other with screwdrivers. At one point, Will stabbed him with a screwdriver up on top of the cage, which was wild.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, so then I think it's Kyle grabs the thumbtack bag. They lay the thumbtacks down. And then, I don't know, more match happens in between. I got lost in the sauce a bit. But then Will sets up the Styles Clash into the thumbtacks, which might be one of the gnarliest thumbtack spots I've ever seen. That was insane.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, speaking of the Johnson, I think he had thumbtacks down there.
I think Sky Blue is going to be a little disappointed. He's going to be out of commission for a little bit, you know?
That's the kind of pain that
Dr. Sky, you know, fuck.
That might fucking hurt there, buddy.
Oh yeah, good luck with that fella.
The Spanish Fly, I believe, was next, right off the top of the cage.
They climbed up to the top of the cage and hit a Spanish Fly, which has to be one of the most dangerous spots I've ever seen. Jesus Christ!
It looked like they were good.
Will was limping a little bit, but he might have been selling. So who knows? Exactly. You know? We don't know.
Well, Fletcher looked like he'd actually been hit by a truck at the end, but
that's true. But he also might have been selling, you know. So we'll see. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
It just sets up that beautiful moment where, similar to the MJF thing to earlier tonight, he's just screaming, "I fucking hate you."
Yes,
I fucking hate you.
Yep. I hate
this rift will never be healed between these guys. No. That's why Will had to just put him down, and so they can move on from
Hidden
each other.
Blade and beyond that. Like you said, P had to put him down for good.
Yep.
Tiger Driver 91.
Yep. He had to be willing to leave this behind, you know? And just shout out to the post-match selling by Kyle, even if he was actually hurt. Either way, fucking played
it
up
little
perfectly.
Things like how he's holding his hands.
Yep.
Those are the kind of visuals that I think they're not going to necessarily teach you shit like that. You just got to know.
Whether
it's movies, stuff. Whether it's what you actually are doing, for fuck's sake. Hopefully not, but like, that's the kind of shit that visually it's going to impact the crowd and impact how we just took away from that match. And in our second bloody match of the night, I fucking thought it delivered on every level. I like, their feud has been so good. Revolution feels like the culmination of so many feuds. I'm sad.
This is what's crazy is that we have another couple pay-per-views coming up pretty quick, and we don't have a lot of stories set up right now. So it's going to be kind of like when we had the first all in, all out double show, like where we just didn't have a lot of stories going in, and it was just kind of chaos.
Dynasty's in what, April 6th? So
we got a month. We got like a little less than a month. We got 3 weeks. It'll be some short builds, but we will have some stuff. What I suspect will happen is a few of these will probably just continue. As weird as that's
going to sound. Four Dynamites, four Collisions, eight sets of television until
Dynasty? Or the stuff that's already been kind of sort of set up by like the endings of some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Like we could see maybe, I mean, not to jump ahead, but we could see some of the, like the fallout from the main event maybe playing into some stuff that's going to play over the next couple pay-per-views. And maybe we don't have as many main event or title feuds.
Yeah, maybe.
Perhaps. It really just depends on what they do. You know what I mean? It really does.
What do you think of Will Ospreay winning?
Kyle could win here. I don't think it would be the craziest thing. And in our minds, we were both talking about this. Like, this match and this is like our number three contender, our number two contender. You know what I mean? Like, after, you know, because we already still have a number one contender.
Because at this point, you've had Hangman win, Swerve win, and Will Ospreay win. Non-title matches that seemingly should put them at the very top of the card.
Yes.
If you're going ranked on importance of the match that they just won.
I mean, there are other champions those guys can face, though. I mean, they don't necessarily need to go after the world title.
Face so each other. Could... What the fuck does a Will Ospreay versus Hangman match look like, dude? Because I gotta know.
I gotta know. Maybe, yeah.
No, but I think it's time that everyone has their guns set on Moxley. And that's, you know, what I think will really help. And I guess speaking of that, unless there's anything else you wanted to add, because that match was really fucking nuts.
I don't think. Let me see.
Kyle Fletcher's stock, I mean, it's literally never been higher.
Quite literally. And it keeps getting higher every time somehow, and I don't know how he manages to keep doing that. So if he keeps doing that.
As one of our new 2025 four pillars in AEW, I'm very, very proud of this man.
Every one of our pillars is progressing quite nicely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm very proud of how far he's going to go. This is going to be special. So, okay, let's jump into our main event. And there was a couple things that when we were doing our predictions that we knew needed to happen. First thing first, we both fully agreed. Christian, people had forgotten about this thing. He had to cash in. He fucking had to. He absolutely had to. Thankfully, he did. But there was a bit of a match before that. So,
yeah,
we opened up the LA crowd. Resembled Australia. They sang Adam Copeland's theme. I love that. Love that. We haven't mentioned that enough. Insane crowd tonight, guys. If you were there, seriously, good on you. Good on you for showing up and showing out, because you guys were awesome. You made every match feel important, and I'm sure everyone appreciated that. So that was really cool. But right out of the gate, I respect Cope for trying. He was slugging the shit out of Moxley, but
oh yeah,
the word that stuck here, and look, they just followed three insane matches. But at this point, I think the heatless that has been happening really showed up at this moment at the beginning. Because Cope is out there, and if there was heat to this fucking, to this feud, he is slugging the shit out of Moxley. And it was pretty fucking quiet.
Yeah, the crowd were pretty dead at this point. I mean, they had three insane back-to-back matches, and they also had already lost a lot of energy during that match with Mariah. That's why the only thing I would move, now that we're at this point in the show, I feel like comes a lot, that's what I would move. That should have been the main event, because that should have been the energy you were ending on. This match should have slotted in right perfectly before then, and because it doesn't even feel like what we did, even with the ending angle, which I liked, that feels like that shouldn't have been the end of the show, almost. It almost looks like we should have had that, cut the backstage, maybe an interview or something, you know? And then we cut to the main event, you know? And then, I don't know, like, but at the same time, it is what it is. This is what we got, you know? But, yeah.
See, I mean, look, they're out there really trying to have a strong style match for that first couple minutes. And then it slows down to what Moxley wants the pace to be. And this is something we've talked about all the time.
Yeah.
And for some reason, and this really stuck out to me tonight, commentary didn't acknowledge it at all.
Moxley, commentary is just sick of this shit at this point, too?
I don't know. And this really stuck out tonight because you would think after what we just saw, it's fresh on the mind. We're getting back to Moxley, and he hates what AEW has become. And he, in the matches...
Wait, hold on. Did we even mention that Swerve was the next, like, the barrels, like, his barrel's on you at this point? Like, you know, his barrel pointed at you? Like, that's whoever wins this? Like, did they even really mention that? Like, okay, they did?
No, kind of. Like, they mentioned the number one contender thing, but they were also trying not to mention Christian for the obvious reason if they wanted to be the shock, right? But, you know, at this point, this would have made a really good excuse for the announcers to kind of help Moxley out here a little bit and be like, look, this is what Moxley wants. He wants it to be like just dirty and, you know, I want to fucking put you in a headlock. I want to choke you out. I want this match to end by you fucking fainting. That's what Moxley wants. And you could really, really, I think, taken advantage of the situation and sold that because he hates what it's become. And he's going to wrestle this match in the style that he wants, not what they want. And that would be, in a way, fun little heat. They show the ops watching. Anything about that?
I mean, Samoa Joe's the world champion.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I wasn't sure like what they did there. I was like, okay, interesting.
Samoa Joe the one that beat Swerve?
No, Joe beat MJF. Swerve beat Joe.
Oh, yeah. Okay, maybe that's the idea. Maybe they're going to run that back.
Yeah, there's something there. There's something there.
Joe got beat by him, and they didn't obviously run that back because they wanted to, you know, go full on to Swerve. Maybe not right away, but maybe that's a long term. You know, like after hooking them, maybe Hook and Shibata will become tag champions. Maybe Hook and Shibata are the ones that beat the Hurt Syndicate or something like that. You know what I mean?
So
it's long down the road, but like maybe that happens. And then Joe's like, oh, I had to prove myself now. I'm going to become world champion again, you know?
Looking back now, one of the things Moxley was really trying to do in this match was constantly try and choke him out with the bulldog choke. He went to it like four or five times in a row. He was really trying. He had to scold Bryce. He goes to grab a chair. Bryce takes it from him. Cope goes for a roll up. Nothing happens. And then he sends Cope crashing into him. And that's when he's going to set up the concerto. And Cope in a really cool spot. Because the concerto has been one of the things carrying the feud on television. That's been the idea is he's been taking out the members one by one. And that's been really fun to follow. Cope kicks out of it in a way. Like he literally kicks the fucking chair into his face. They get on their feet, double clothesline, and they're both down. And then we get the moment that, in my head, the match doesn't really kick off until we see Wheeler going. Because you know Wheeler's going to come out. It's just the decision. What does Wheeler do? What does Wheeler do? He gets to the ring. He's looking both of them down. Boom, hits Cope with a Busaiko knee. Grabs the briefcase, hands it to Moxley. Switchblade Jay White hits the ring, takes out Yuta. White gets the briefcase, swings for Moxley. Sorry, Edge. Cracks him over the fucking face. And then he brawls with Yuta to the back. I thought that was really good. And I thought something we've mentioned a lot with Wheeler Yuta And this has been kind of the direction he's going, right? But what is, and I'm just mentioning this because it really stuck out to me. What does all commentary say? Oh, he's just got Stockholm syndrome.
This isn't Wheeler's choice. This isn't a decision he made. This is all John Moxley. Yep.
When let's remind everyone real quick. Why is Wheeler even associated with him in the first place? He left his friends because Wheeler Yuta wants greatness. He wants to be great. All of his motivation, the way Claudio treats him, the way he gets treated by everyone, it's about him learning the hard way from whether it was Regal, Danielson, anyone, learning the hard way to become one of the greats. That's the only reason he stuck with Moxley. It's not fucking Stockholm syndrome. Where did this come from? What are we Why every single thing we've done with Yuta for 3 years has been about him chasing greatness. I'm sorry. That's the first thing that like really just it hit a note.
Also a little bit insensitive to say that too, I would say.
Yes, like what are we doing to Yuta? He gets the bit, and yet again, when he came out, hit that knee, he got a bigger reaction than Mox got until the fucking end of the night. Like this, why? I didn't get that. I think the Wheeler Yuta thing is so obvious what he wants. And for them to just diminish it like that, I'm like, bro, that can't make him happy. Like, really? I don't know. Anyways, that's a little thing to me. I love what he did here. Cope hit a spear. Did you have any comments on that? I was just, that really stuck out to me.
No, I mean, like, I it was something that we both, like, when they said that, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Way to just make the guy, like, completely, like, unresponsible for his own actions here and not making a choice. Like, we actually, it's one of the things we talked about, or we've talked about recently. I don't know if it's something we talked about specifically on this podcast this past week, but it might have been. So if I, forgive me if I'm wrong and it was a different week. But either way, I know very recently in the last few weeks, we talked about the idea that AEW does character arcs very well. It might have even been in this podcast. You know, like, and this feels like this is a misstep in his character arc. If we're characterizing him as not making his own choices, then what the fuck is he even doing? Why is he not like what? Like what? He's just so fucking Stockholm that he can't possibly make his own decisions. Do what?
Do we not have a heel commentator? That's the person that should be sticking their neck out.
Was Nigel still out here for this match, or had he
been replaced? Nigel was not out here. Mm. JR was though. So did JR replace Taz? We might have had three baby faces.
That could have been the issue, yeah. I mean, not that you always need to have a heel commentator per se, but I mean, like, you know, like,
usually that's the person that'll be like, this is why Wheeler's doing this. Or even like fucking Callis would have shot this down.
Yeah.
Anyways, because we care a lot about character arcs in AEW, and it feels like this is just so. Because once commentary says it, it almost feels like that's their plan now. And is Wheeler really going to have to get convinced to leave Moxley because he's, like, under a fucking spell? Like, what? No, he's the world fucking champion. He turned on Danielson. He had the opportunity. He could have been the white knight babyface that Danielson wants, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, that is not at all what he was doing. Anyways, I thought the rest of this match was really fucking good because guess what? After the third spear, Bryce goes to make the count, yank the fuck out. Christian Cage is there. Everyone's on their feet at this point. They were on their feet mm-hmm. for Cope. Christian Cage smacks Cope in the head with his contract. He signs it. Three-way match. Boom. All right. It's finally on the table. No take backs at this point. Mm-hmm. What did they say on Skeleton Crew? Oh, fuck. She had a funny line. No takesies? I don't know. It was funny. Anyways.
Yeah.
Cage hits a spear on Cope. Everyone's losing their fucking minds. He hits the kill switch. Moxley flies in with the bulldog choke. They did something here I think was going to be insane. While he's getting choked out, he puts Cage puts a hand on Cope's chest. One, two, Moxley yanks him away. I was like, oh, if he wins it like that, that would have been insane.
That would have been crazy.
That was a brilliant spot.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Cage choked out cold and Moxley retains. The fans are pissed. He leaves slowly through the crowd before he can escape. Prince Nana's there. And then it pans to the sky like he's fucking Batman up there.
Literally.
Swerve Strickland on the goddamn roof. jumps down, perched from the balcony, onto the hits a swerve stomp on Moxley, and he promises he's going to be the next AEW World Champion. This is his house. Now it feels like we have our guy. Swerve.
Right? If it's not Swerve, it's nobody, right? It's Moxley's champion forever. Because
Kenny's a champion. Kenny could have been Mr. AEW, but it's always been Swerve. It has to be Swerve. In Philadelphia.
I think even Kenny would admit, in the time that he was gone, the guy that stepped up the most for the company and became the guy like Kenny that could carry the company was Swerve. I mean, 1,000,000%.
And that's why I want to give a little bit of... You got to feel for Cope and Mox here a little bit, because they tried their hardest at the beginning to get that crowd going, but they just followed those classics, like three classics in a row. And I think the story that they were trying to tell, too, of Moxley really, like, he wants to end Cope's career. Like, he should not be in this fight with him. He wants to target the neck. And I think on another night it might work. And I think it would have gotten the reaction it deserved. Because I do feel bad for these guys. I feel bad for Cope, man. I mean, who knows if we see him in another main event. Like, I feel bad for it. But, yeah, I mean, now that we've covered all the bases, just what do you think of the match in general? And what do you think of... I mean, they kind of did the thing we were hoping in New Japan that they do all the time, where they set up the challenger right away. Don't fuck around, man. Let's end the show by knowing who's going next, because that shit's fun. So, yeah, what do you think of all of this whole thing here?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with, I would echo everything that you said, which was that, like, they hit everything they needed to hit, including getting rid of Christian's title shot, because that needed to be resolved one way or the other.
People had forgotten about that. Like, they had
it needed to be off the table so that people don't ever have to bring it back up again. So that it's not like there was something like that they did. Maybe it was Wardlow's title shot with the TNT title or something like that. Like, they sat on it for forever and then it didn't do anything when it came back. You know what I mean? Like, or maybe it wasn't that. It was something along those lines, though. I do remember there was something they sat on for forever and it just didn't land when they finally did it, you know? And this time it did, because, I mean, like you said, no one even remembered. So, like, as soon as they saw it, they're like, oh yeah, that's right, Christian has the title shot. So it instantly became more exciting. But I mean, yeah, like you said, they did their best to try and get things going, but the way Moxley's been wrestling is just not going to get the crowd going, especially after all those matches we had. And setting up with Swerve in that way, I really hope they take that as a thing going forward. Not every time, but when, like, a big contender that we know, and maybe that's what you do when you know there's going to be a big time contender that's going to be stepping up to the plate. Maybe you set them up with the number one contenders type match, and you say the winner of this is going to be, you know, going forward, and then they can literally be like, hey, I'm here, and everybody's, because it's still on everybody's mind. So it makes a lot of sense to do that. I didn't dislike the match. It's just this is the kind of match, and AEW's gotten really good at this, where this is something that AEW needed to be able to do, like WWE, I think, eventually, because WWE does this all the time, where on paper the match isn't going to be insane, but you can do enough with gimmicking and, you know, the ref bumping out and stuff like that, that it can make it, it can stretch it enough that it gets to that level where you can throw something like the title shot in and it makes it more interesting, and then it can carry the rest of the match, because then really who knows what it's like with the wild card at that point. Who really knows what's going to happen once that kicks off? And then it really was only a few minutes after Christian got into the match before the match was over, it feels like. You know what I mean? Like, so...
Yeah,
you
know. Yeah, yeah. Everyone was on their feet. I mean, yeah, it's going to go down in the record books. I mean, I'm even looking here as this was a triple three-way match for the title. So... Yep. Yeah, once Swerve won... Did it become pretty apparent, like, what we're doing here?
I mean, I figured Moxley was going to retain, because, like, Ricochet probably is one of the, like, if in my mind, if Ricochet wins this title shot, the story for him is going to be being so arrogant when he walks in that he just gets his ass handed to him. You know what I mean? That's, you don't have him win the title right now. It wouldn't really make sense for him having cheated his way up to the top, because he would have to probably cheat to beat Swerve on this level of energy that he's on right now. You know what I mean? Not that you couldn't have Swerve lose clean, but... You probably wouldn't if you still want him to be a legit contender going forward. And I would think if Ricochet was going to win the title, that would be the plan still. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah. So I just don't see Ricochet winning the title right now. Maybe if somebody else wins the title near future, but I don't think it's dropping it to Ricochet. That just feels like...
Yeah, no, I think
what Ricochet match would they even have we're going to have the high flying guy get grounded for 10 minutes and then what? And he starts flipping around. Like, okay, I guess that could be okay.
Yeah. Whereas I think Ricochet versus Cope might have been pretty interesting. So
that could be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that on paper would be pretty interesting. But yeah, I mean, here we are now. Right. So we're going to have 8 episodes of television where we're going to be able to do this thing with Swerve. And I think it's going to be so easy to really get behind this. Swerve is proof of what you can become in AEW. He is living, breathing proof of what you can achieve in this company. And I think it's going to write itself on why he is what AEW needs again. And yeah, I think this is going to be really, really fun. You know, they didn't pivot a couple months ago. They stuck to their guns. I think you easily could have pivoted to Hobbs. I still think to this day that could have worked. And Hobbs could have literally lost it here. Like, he could have lost it to someone here, and it would have been a shorter title reign. But I think it would have worked in what they were trying to do. But they stuck to their guns. And so now you got to see this thing out, and you got to put it back on Swerve. And I think everyone's going to rejoice. We're going to have Swerve take this baby to All In. And I don't know how you get there, but I think between Mercedes versus Athena, Kenny versus Okada, and Swerve versus Ospreay, I mean, look, man, I think you're All In card. You can really go out there and book one of the fucking most insane wrestling cards possible. You have the talent. Tonight was proof. Really, really good show. Just 100%. A fucking awesome show. So, yeah, guys. Unless you have anything else you want to add here at the end. Any little nuggets of info you got on your... if there was a... As always, if there was a... post-media scrum after Brawl Out 6.0.
Yeah, if Will Ospreay and fucking Kenny Omega got into a fight backstage for real, you know?
We quite literally record this within like 3 minutes after that fucking show shuts off. So we are fresh on the brain here, people. So
if Jack Perry came back and slugged Daniel Garcia.
I'll tell you what, man, I can miss Jack. I'm missing Jack Perry a little bit.
He was good. I mean, he needed time off after the amount of time he was champion for, though. Like, you can't be champion for that long, that dominant, have that good of a reign, and then just immediately come back. Look at what it did to Orange Cassidy. It kind of diminished Orange Cassidy a little bit when they did that. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, so.
And then when he took time off this time and came back, he had that match with Takeshi. He's heat's back, and it's beautiful.
Yep. 100%.
So thanks again, everyone. We will be back with our normal show. Probably the 17th or 18th is when our next show will be, where we'll have a good time breaking down, hopefully, this next incredible week of wrestling. We had a fun week this week with Dynamite and Collision. Lots of luchadors and women wrestling on Collision.
Some good wrestling quality.
Yeah. So, yeah, as you guys know, we'll do the double favorites next week. That's always a fun time. So,
doubly-doubly-doubly-doubly-doo.
First half hour of the show is just constant glaze, as intended.
Intended.
But that'll be it for us. Tony Storm's going to take us out tonight. Wait a minute.
I think the soundboard thinks you've forgotten.
Maybe she did. You know what? Tony Storm is Tony Storm. Thanks again, everyone. Catch you on the flip side.
What makes you think that I've forgotten?
Tom Freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Better be on that clam digging. Bloody clam digging.
What happened here?
Go fuck yourself.
Damn.
And I am a sports entertainer.